hello there. Welcome to the On to the Next podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa, and I am so happy you are here. If you are watching on YouTube, you already see I have a guest with me today. Welcome, Miss Melissa Finley. She is a licensed clinical professional counselor and also a longtime friend of mine, which is fun because I've known her since I was in high school. So very, very cute little relationship here. But hi, Melissa. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes. Okay. So this is real because we have a legit professional right here. Okay. She is a actual, you know, a counselor, which is so exciting. And I have always wanted to have, you know, pick the brain of an actual professional in the industry in terms of not music, not arts, not acting and all that stuff. It's more like a legit professional who does get to work with a lot of different type of people, which I think is really cool. So before Melissa gives her intro, I did want to do a little trigger warning because we do have a professional on. I don't want you to think this means like you are cured and you did therapy, because this is not therapy. This is just us chit-chatting and having fun. But more importantly, we are talking about some sensitive topics and they might be brought up throughout the whole episode, topics involving different forms of, you know, substance abuse, addiction, different forms of abuse in general, relationships, all that stuff. So if at any point this feels like it's too much for you or you are uncomfortable, I just ask that you just don't listen anymore. I don't want you to feel any type of negative way about yourself or about what we're talking about. And if you do need help, please reach out to a loved one, a trusted friend or family member or whoever that person is for you. We will also be putting in some different hotlines to contact depending on what you need. And just most importantly, take care of yourself, do what you need to do. And if that means you are not listening to today's episode, I will be okay. Just please take care of yourself.
Beautiful.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Make sure we got that across. Okay. So thank you. Yeah. Melissa, can you please give us your intro?
Sure. Yeah. So I, like Alyssa said, I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor, and I have my own private practice. It's in Lombard. There's a physical location. I also do telehealth, which is really popular. So yeah. I can see people all over the state of Illinois, which is where I'm licensed. And I see adults, and I work with mostly like complex trauma.
Okay.
And I also work with family of origin healing. And then I work with neurodivergent adults. Okay. So autism, giftedness, ADHD.
Okay.
And complex trauma, which is also considered kind of under the neurodivergent umbrella. And let's see, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, but mostly, yeah, like today, I'm really excited just to talk therapy talk and my passions.
Yeah.
So that's who I am.
Yes, that's perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being here. I'm also so excited to talk about things. I feel like it'll be like validating hearing a professional's POV for someone who actually, you know, sees different people every day. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to hear that perspective and also the educational part behind it.
Yeah, as I think it's really important to like talk to someone who is in the field, and I'm really excited to talk through like different modalities and things that you can like look for if you're looking for a therapist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just things
totally.
Like that, just to get more people exposed to it, which is awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So before we get into all that fun stuff, I do have to ask you, what era are you in right now?
Yeah, so I've been thinking a lot about this, and I'm like, what is an era? Like, is that like 10 years? Is that like 2 years? Like, what era am I in? So most recently, I would say in the last like 6 months to a year, the era I am in is like full acceptance of myself.
Oh, wait, that's so sweet.
Yeah, and embracing my powerful intuition.
So. Ooh, oh my gosh. That was deep. What do you mean by powerful intuition? Do you mean like trusting your gut?
I mean trusting my gut and realizing that my gut, the intuition that I have is a little more, seems to be a little more connected than what a lot of people have. So
okay.
Almost like a I don't want to say superpower, but like a gift.
That's sweet. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Even a superpower, it makes sense.
Yeah.
That's really cute. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Aw, I hope everyone's in their self their acceptance era. That's so cute.
It's fun. It took a long time to get here.
Yeah, but it's worth it, right?
Totally worth it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing. Let's get into first, can you talk a bit about like neurodiversity and how that can impact someone's day-to-day life and like what that means. I guess this going down very basic and then kind of going deeper because I do want to learn about like complex traumas. That's a really interesting phrase.
So neurodiversity. So, you know, everyone's kind of wired differently. Their brains are wired differently. Their nervous system is wired differently. So we're all kind of neurodiverse.
Okay.
You know, we're all kind of different from one another. But when I talk specifically about neurodivergent adults or neurodiversity, and I mention autism, giftedness, and ADHD, those are some of the areas in complex trauma that fall under the neurodivergent umbrella. Other things that fall under it are OCD, Down syndrome, okay, bipolar. So a lot of things kind of fall under that neurodivergent umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that means is just you're divergent from what is considered quote unquote typical.
Okay.
Okay. So we use the word allistics.
Okay.
Or neurotypicals. And those are people who just kind of almost naturally think more like what we consider more common.
Okay.
Or more what society is set up for, basically.
Yeah.
So when I say neurodivergent, I am specifically talking about those areas, complex trauma, autism, giftedness, ADHD. Those are kind of my areas, but like general anxiety disorder, those are areas that I work with that would fall under that umbrella. But there's a whole slew of different things that fall under that umbrella. And so if you are neurodivergent or, you know, you've been diagnosed with any of those things, you want to make sure that you have a therapist who's familiar with those things,
mm-hmm.
not just like I'm neurodiverse affirming or neurodivergent affirming. What does that mean? Because it could be a whole lot of different things, you know?
Yeah.
So I get clients that are specifically looking for someone who knows about autism, giftedness, ADHD, and complex trauma.
Okay. For complex trauma, is that, so I know it's like in the same umbrella, but is that like, is that, okay. So like, does someone get complex trauma throughout their life?
Yeah.
Or is it something that they are like born with?
That's a great question. So that's one of the ones that you're not born with.
Okay.
So complex trauma. So PTSD is, you know, the post-traumatic stress syndrome. So PTSD disorder. I don't like to use that word, but PTSD is in the DSM-5. So the DSM-5 is where clinicians and doctors and psychiatrists, they use that book to diagnose someone. So there's like a list of different things and you have to like meet certain criteria. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
PTSD is in the DSM-5. Complex trauma is not in the DSM-5. It is not something that's listed there. So for like insurance purposes, I wouldn't put complex trauma.
Okay.
I would put PTSD.
Got it.
But complex trauma is, I like to think of like PTSD would be, and there's different types of trauma, but it's like you see a car accident happen or, you know, you watched, you know, something happening between your parents, like a big fight and someone got hurt or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like there's big T and little T trauma.
Okay.
Complex trauma is when it's happening over and over and over again. And it's not ever, it's like, you know, a child who is born into a home where there's yelling all the time. There's always yelling, always yelling, always yelling.
Mm-hmm.
That's PTSD, but it's complex. It's like it didn't just happen once.
Got it.
It didn't just happen twice. It just constantly happened. And so it shifts your wiring and it shifts the way that you kind of function in the world.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's a very clear cut way of understanding it.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's a good, okay. I never, okay. I couldn't, I like use context clues, but that's a much better way to explain that. Mm-hmm. So in, okay. So does this align with, you said you work with family of origin? Did I say that correctly?
Yes, family of origin. Okay. So FOO. in my world, it's like FOO.
Every day. Okay.
Family of origin.
Okay.
So family of origin work I do is definitely complex. There's definitely complex trauma mm-hmm. involved in that. And also, because I know this is on your show, this is a big theme when you're in relationships with people.
Ah!
Like, a lot of times, family of origin stuff shows up.
Totally.
So, I like to tell people, this is a really fun thing. Fun. In my world, it's fun.
it's like traumatizing.
It's traumatizing, but it's fun. I like to tell people that you're in your home, you're born in your home, you're raised in your home, the very first place you recreate your family of origin attachment figures is in your job. So the very first job you have, you are recreating family of origin patterns and attachments.
That is so triggering. So, yeah, trigger warning, because I'm already thinking of all the men in my office that I hate, and it's not personal to, thankfully, my dad, but just to toxic men in my family that I've seen. So I'm probably carrying some angst because I love all the women in my office and they all are like different types of survivors or just powerful women. So I think I gravitate towards that. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that. I think it's familiar. So it's safe to me. What?
With
the men, we don't need to talk about because we know.
Yeah.
We already know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And so it's, you know, when I say you recreate it, someone might represent a sister figure. Someone might represent a mother. Someone might represent an aunt. Someone might represent a younger sibling. And it's subconscious. It's not, not conscious.
Yeah.
It's unconscious. It's subconscious. And if you're really honed in or you're in therapy and you have a family of origin, they can kind of start talking about relationships and who. So it's like a pool almost to recreate that type of relationship with that person. It's really interesting.
That is. And there are like, oh, my work mom, like my work. So like,
yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
And I just, for disclaimer, I don't hate all the men in my office, just a couple. But you know who you are. I was kidding. No, just a couple. They probably for sure know because I'm kind of, I make
them
know. Yeah, someone has to put them in their place. But professionally, obviously. But okay, because I actually had a coworker of mine who was like, I really don't like one of the men that we work with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in an office setting. It's like a classic, like 9 to 4 or 9 to 5, whatever, setting. And she's like, he reminds me of my dad, and I don't talk to my dad anymore. And like, he's really triggering to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, like totally valid. But like, I was just like, yeah, like I get it, you know? And like, we just kind of carried on. But that can make sense, and that can create like a hostile work environment. If there are negative people.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. Human nature, we are kind of, we have like pack mentality,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yes.
And we want to fit in. So what is happening at a level of, what's the word I want to use, like nurture or nature level?
Okay.
Is you're growing up with this family, you spend all this time with them, you learn how to survive with them,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like, this is how I live, this is how I stay alive
yeah.
with these people, with these. And so the next place you go where you spend a lot of time is work. And you're vulnerable, and there's a group mentality, and there's all this kind of interaction.
Yes.
And so, oddly enough, you create these type of like almost like relationships that are similar to your mom, similar to your dad.
Totally.
Because your nervous system is like, how do I survive in this setting? Oh, that guy's like my dad. This is
yes.
how I'm gonna treat him. This is what, you know. And so like you might have a completely different relationship with that same man
mm-hmm.
than this person does.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and so it's a weird kind of like, this is how I'm going to survive in this environment. They're going to represent this. I'm going to hate them. I'm going to stay away from them.
Yeah.
They're going to represent that. because that's what your nervous system knows. That's what you're familiar with. That's your attachment style. Like, so it's really.
And we have, like, I know who I can go to that I can vent to. And I tell my mom at home, like, oh, she's like my aunt. Like, I can vent and we can talk shit. And, like, she knows. So she reminds me of my aunt. Uh-huh. And I know the ones who remind me of my mom. I know the ones who remind me of my siblings. And I'm lucky enough to work in a space where we're all this. You know, most majority of us are the same age range, between 22 and 25, 26. And I'm the oldest in my family, so of the kids.
So you're the oldest. You're so the oldest mentally, and the girl.
Yes.
Like the oldest girl.
Yes,
yeah.
I am. And so roles that go. So yeah, both different roles. Yeah, 100%. But my natural instinct is like to take everyone in and to make sure everyone's comfortable and feels safe at work. Mm. And that's what I do at home, my whole life, in my friend groups, whatever. And so I don't like some of the people in my office because of how they make my coworker, colleagues, / besties at this point, like how they make them feel, and it's like a protective thing. Mm-hmm. And so that can, I always just thought like, oh, I'm just older and like I'm naturally like more protective, or like I naturally had that maternal, mm-hmm. like, oh, let me make sure everyone's taken care of. But that's a really crazy thought.
And that characteristic is very common for oldest daughters, mm-hmm. oldest kids.
Yeah.
Is kind of that like protection.
Yeah.
Inclusion, over responsibility.
Yeah, totally.
People pleasers were parent pleasers.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first people pleaser, you know.
Yeah, so like, yeah.
If, you know, and when you're the oldest, if you think about that, you know, your parents are learning with you, mm-hmm. and every child has a different parent.
Totally.
And so, you know, your parents were who they were when they had you. They were someone different when they had your next sibling. Mm-hmm. They were someone different when. So
totally.
So yeah, taking on that role at work would make sense because that's how you know to. That's your place.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what you do.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh. Okay. So that, because going off of that, that I think is, I've been analyzing more and more as I'm like just growing and like realizing things about myself. And I'm also in therapy on my own. So like Yay. Seeing, so like seeing that and everything in my different path.
I want to scoop on your therapist. I want
to. Oh, I'll show. I can show you her. I've been with her for 2 years now.
Nice.
She met me when I was a senior in college. So a little over 2 years.
So when you were babysitting for me, maybe when you were there?
Roughly overlapped because I babysat for her son.
Oh, yeah. We didn't get into that. Like
how we even like anything really.
Cool.
Just for context, I was going to call her Miss Finley because she was my Miss Finley for a couple of years. Oh. She was my like high school counselor, and so we met. And then shortly after, I was a sophomore or junior. Mm-hmm. But when we had met, I had then told her I was going to the college that I went to, and she happened to be moving to that same area. So it was really convenient as a college student to also babysit because she had a little boy at that time. He's still young, but she was like two or three.
Yeah.
So he was a legit like little baby. And so one of my first like jobs babysitting was with you. Mm-hmm. So we had we had different dynamics. I feel like we had the like professional school setting. Then I remember like, wait, Miss Finley's like, like drinking by me. You're not drinking, but like she came home with a glass of wine or whatever it was. And then I've had the phase of like, wait, now we're talking about boys. And then she's meeting my family and like she meets my friends and people that are in my circle and like just seeing the ebbs and flows of how things.
The boyfriend.
Yeah, she's met them all. She knows
and
them
yeah.
all.
And
they were
adored you.
Thank
and
you.
You're like the last babysitter he accepted in our.
Oh.
You set the bar way too high. And now he's like, no one else.
Oh
so.
My God, I would totally go back though. We'll talk about that
yeah.
slowly. We'll get it back into that, but. Yeah, so yeah, so if I flip up and say Miss Finley, it's just her name on my phone is literally Miss Finley.
That's like so sweet. It like brings tears in my eyes.
Aww. Yes. So what I wanted to mention that I like have now, this is like, I think we make it a joke in social media and pop culture or anything, but the concept of like boys having mommy issues.
Oh,
because
yeah.
also, like I had just said, I am the oldest. I am the oldest daughter. Mm-hmm. I've only ever felt like I've been a nurturer my whole life. Mm-hmm. And so I, without realizing, only really attract men who need nurturing or who have different levels of mommy issues, for the lack of better words.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like finding the balance of like, I feel like now I can kind of tell some clear sign, like red flags beforehand, which I wasn't able to before because I've had different types of mommy issues now that I've experienced with boys.
Okay. I want to hear about I have a lot of theories on this.
Okay.
So I just put a disclaimer out there. Most of my clientele are men.
Okay.
Adult men.
Okay.
And white men specifically. Okay. I would love to hear what kind of different types of mommy issues.
Yes.
I have all my theories and kind of, you know, yeah. What I do. And
well, just for starters, I'm in Hispanic household and yes. family. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, coming from a high context communication culture where we are more of a collective, mm-hmm. I think the mommy issues are different than having white boy mommy issues.
So when you say coming from a collective, what do you mean by that?
So I was a communication major. Uh-huh. So we did a lot of classes kind of mix of psychology and communication.
Okay.
And conflict and communication and how different cultures and communities and genders and everything communicate.
Okay.
And so what I was like shook by that I like will remember forever is like coming from different backgrounds will affect how you communicate.
Okay.
So, for example, I come from a Hispanic background, which is considered a high context communication culture. And that is like the collective. So they typically say different, it's Italian family, how they're family oriented. They make decisions as a group. They might all have multiple Hispanics, have multiple generations living in one household, which is what I grew up in. They say Middle Eastern is high context communication because they are. Low context communication is typically the more is Americans pretty much. So whether that be an American who also happens to be white or who might come from like, you know, a different, just like they're more independent. They're more for themselves first, and they make decisions like, oh well, I want to move out at 18. Great, my mom would never let me move out at 18. She would be like making sure I'm okay and I'm safe and I'm nurtured and and I think a lot of my friends who come from, you know, American backgrounds or who are white, they were able to by 17 they had to pay their own bills and they were kind of let loose.
Got it.
Versus the Hispanics or Asians
okay,
or
for sure.
Like
there's that difference in family of origin.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
And So having a brother, he has not. He's fine. Like he's a good kid. But I know his mommy issues is gonna be that he had such a like loving mom that like he's in like a mom who was always my mom was the one in charge of the house. Like, you know. So like because of that, and I'm also his second mom pretty much without whether or not we think about it like that. Like I am. Like I was his. You know, making sure he felt safe, making sure he was good at school. I made sure he was eating before I was eating. Like whatever.
Right.
So like naturally, I think he doesn't have a serious girlfriend or anything. But I think he's gonna bring home someone who's very similar to my mom and I,
mm-hmm.
because that's what he knows.
Yes.
And I like to joke like my mommy issues is also that I was so loved, like I need that amount of love and like empowerment and like respect back. And so it's hard to find that in men when they're like they want to be the ones who are like it's all about them.
Yes. And I'm gonna challenge you there.
Okay.
Because I do think that, and this is something that I have really kind of in just over the last 5 years had my practice really gotten to know a little bit differently because of the clients I see.
Mm-hmm.
Even just saying that they only have mommy issues puts a lot of pressure on women and takes the responsibility off of men.
Yeah.
So we're creating, if I'm seeing someone and they're having, you know, struggles in their relationship and I'm like, well, they have mommy issues. Like, uh-huh. What was your mom? I'm automatically putting the responsibility on the women in their lives,
mm-hmm.
and discounting the men.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing someone who I'm trying to get them to be more responsible for their actions. And so there are no, in my world.
Okay.
And this is Bowen theory, family system.
Okay. I've read. Okay. Yeah.
You know about Bowen?
Yeah, I do. Because of my comm class.
He's he's awesome. Old school. But
yeah.
So there is a system at play and dad is in there.
Yes.
No matter what.
Yes.
So let's say someone has mommy issues, like a young man has mommy issues.
Uh-huh.
Like, give me an example of, like, you said different types of mommy issues.
Yes. And I also will say, I think everyone has both parent issues, whether they're positive or negative, whether their parent was in their lives or not, there's still things that come up from it.
For sure.
But because I'm a woman, I'm noticing more of the mommy issues because I'm holding that place now for them.
Yes.
Like, I'm the new representation of a mother figure or a female
for
figure.
Sure. Yes.
But I do agree that there are, for sure, the dad is also in part, or vice versa. Girls are always like, oh, I have daddy issues because my dad left me. Okay, but your mom stayed, so how does that handle, how is your relationship with your mom?
That's
like,
right.
You know, I do think it's both
That's
ways.
Right. Yeah.
But for the sake of, like, different experiences I've seen, I've talked to guys with healthy mom relationships,
right.
But they were either too healthy, where he was, like, the sole world in that household, because
we wouldn't call that healthy.
So that's not healthy.
Mesh,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a
but
mesh.
Yes,
codependent.
It is.
Yeah.
So I've either seen that, or I've seen the one where the mom wasn't emotionally available for their son or for their kids, and so then that made them not have, maybe have a void.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've seen where the mom was physically there their whole life, was fully physically available, but wasn't. Maybe was more passive aggressive, or was maybe had angst because they didn't get to live their life, or because of other, like, outside external things that was put on the kid.
That's legit. And I think for me, what
yeah.
I notice is, in some of those ways, those men that you're talking about, their mom had similarly dysfunctional,
mm-hmm.
or if we don't want to call it dysfunctional, we can call it, I don't know another word, immature
okay.
relationships with their husbands.
Okay.
And, or boyfriends,
yeah.
or whatever, baby
yeah.
daddy, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, whatever you want to, like, but they had similar relationships with them in one way or another. So let's say there's a dad, mom and dad, you're dating someone, he's got big time mommy issues
mm-hmm.
because maybe the mom is, I don't know, is there a specific one you want to kind of unpack?
And I do, but it would be so obvious who I'm talking about.
Okay, so we won't do that.
I mean,
you should have, like, given me a little tip.
No, I'm okay. I'm usually, like, down, but
yeah, it'd be too, no,
if you know, you know, and I just, yeah,
okay.
I'm not going to go, I don't want to, like, expose the specific experience that I have
okay,
been
so
a part
of. Go with one. I'm going to say, let's
hypothetically,
you're with a guy that is, he has mommy issues. His mom was emotionally not available.
Okay.
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 Okay. So there are a couple of different things that could be happening there. First of all, really important to know that a lot of our, what we're talking about is attachment, right? So attachment
okay.
styles, right? There's different types of attachment
mm-hmm.
styles, avoidant attachment, anxious attachment.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar
yeah.
with these? Okay. So by the age of 6,
mm-hmm.
some people say even younger, 80%+ of your coping mechanisms within relationships are developed in your
wow.
brain.
Wow. By 6.
By 6. Some people say by 2.
That's insane.
That high percentage, because our brains, first of all, I'm going to go on a little tangent here. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, this is me, like, psychoeducation. I love it. Okay. So think of when you're born. Your brain is the most supported with, like, the juices in there for the neuroceptors
uh-huh.
to connect and everything. Because when you're born, you're this teeny tiny thing that is so vulnerable and could die if, at any moment, if the basic needs aren't met.
Yeah.
Okay. So very animalistic,
mammalian yeah.
brain, fight, flight, freeze, submit, attach. Okay?
Oh, my God.
That's the
yeah.
nervous system,
yeah.
right? Okay. So when you're baby, your brain is just, like, taking things in a way that babies can, but also in a way that's going to keep you alive.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So under those mammalian, the core part of your brain, it's the amygdala, that fight, flight, freeze, submit, attach
mm-hmm.
response. So you're looking around as a baby, okay? You're 8 months old, and you're like, oh, man, like, this is not
I know,
your body and brain.
Yeah,
like,
I understand.
Dad's mad, yelling at mom. Mom's, my nervous system is responding. My nervous system doesn't feel safe. Your nervous system is going to be the most sensitive the younger you are, because you are literally the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
To stay alive.
Yes.
Okay. So this is what the argument is. There is a lot of research that at conception, your nervous system starts developing, and whatever is being said to you through your mom's eyes, whatever's being said to your mom, whatever's being heard, the energy she's feeling is literally developing your nervous system. Yes. So talk about, like, there's a lot that goes into that in your nervous system. Then you're born and you're like looking around, you're getting, you know, you're having this like, whatever, I need this to survive. I can't cry. When I cry, things get more anxious, or I feel the anxiety, so I'm crying more, whatever. Babies can recognize what especially their moms need, because, you know, they were part of their mom. They were born with their mom's blood. Their mom created blood to create them.
Yeah,
you know?
So
they're real in tune to their moms, especially. By the age of, like, so there's a cord that attaches from your eyes to that part of your brain. Mm-hmm. It's the thickest, and it's one of the most active before the age of 2. So what you're seeing and what's connecting to that amygdala is taking in, and think about before the age of 2, you're nonverbal, really. Uh-huh. It's all kind of implicit. It's just like a felt sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So your brain's starting to connect. What's dangerous? What's safe? What can I do? That's at 2. Now, some people say 6, but there are some brain scans now that they can do that the majority of those kind of like neuroceptor pathways are developed by 2. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't change. That doesn't mean that they can't, you know, let's say you're 4 and your parents get a divorce and you're in a household where it's less... there's less animosity, it's safer to you, then different neural pathways are going to get developed.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the most, I don't know what the fluid is, but it's this fluid that's in your brain that is literally encouraging every bit of synapses, neuroceptors that can happen around staying alive, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So you have a boy, you have a man, a young man you're dating, okay? And he's got mommy issues.
Okay.
Okay. And when he was born, his mom didn't feel supported by his dad.
Okay.
So she's resentful.
Okay.
Okay. She's like, aren't you going to, you know, come with me and help me with him? And dad's like, why do you need my help? You should be able to do this, or whatever dad does.
Yeah.
Dad's probably detached. And probably has a lot of the same characteristics as boy does.
Okay? Yeah.
So then mom starts overcompensating for the relationship with husband into that relationship with boy.
Okay.
Or starts protecting boy from dad.
Mm-hmm.
Protecting, I mean, like, I know he's emotionally unavailable. When you cry, dad gets mad. So I can't let you cry. I got to be cold to you. That type of, so all that stuff is going on. So really, there's nothing that's happening in a child's life that doesn't involve both parents and siblings developing it. And so when a boy, when a young man has mommy issues, and they do, I'm like, that there are a lot of things happening.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things happening. And it is way beyond just mommy issues. It's like mommy issues, mommy, dad, mom and dad issues, mom, you know, mom with other siblings issues. And then when you get into like what you're talking about, different cultures and things, then that's a whole nother layer, right? Because there's all kinds of things happening there.
Oh my God. No, I'm like on edge. And so then, like, for the girls that, you know, I think it's like they try, like, pop culture like glamorizes daddy issues, like girls having daddy issues.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's like not cute. It's like sad. And it's like, how can we help these girls and these boys with these different parental issues? But when girls are like, oh, I have daddy issues, and they make it like it's a joke. It can be the same thing, just in reverse.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yes.
Like for what we just explained for men or for boys,
that's
or whatever.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's so interesting, though.
And, you know, with men, it's going to be, it could be a little bit different in how men treat their little girls versus how they treat, like, mm-hmm. I was raised in a house. It was Catholic.
Okay.
You know, I come from a big family.
Uh-huh.
And my dad treated the boys very differently than he treated the girls.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, up until I was in my adult life, he was an absent. I mean, he was he worked four jobs.
Yeah.
And he just wasn't emotionally available to mm-hmm. me, you know. And with my brothers, it was like they were the ones that would go with him to work. They would, and I would be expected to stay at home, cook, be with yeah. the kids, you know, that kind of
yeah.
thing. And also have like more of like the, like he would say, like, are you wearing that out of the house? Like, what? Like that kind
totally.
Of
totally
like sexist.
Totally.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Are you saying anything about what the boys are wearing out of the house?
Yeah.
Like, why
yeah.
do I have to be careful? You know, like,
yeah.
So there was that going on. So he was treating me differently out of what he thought was being like more protective.
Uh-huh.
Or, but that's like the masculinity culture.
Totally.
Right? It's like, I don't need you to treat me like that.
Uh-huh.
I need you to treat me like a human being and like one of your children, but you don't have to protect me in that way. And
yeah.
that was his way of showing affection. It's like, you can show me affection by sitting down with me and talking to
mm-hmm.
me and engaging with me emotionally and being vulnerable with me
yeah.
and not having this like macho attitude.
Totally.
That's how you can help me, you know,
yeah.
your little girl, because
totally.
That's going to help me in the future. But
yeah,
that's not. And plus that was, I mean, my dad, if he had passed, he's passed, but if he's like 76 or whatever. So that generation.
Yeah, it is that age.
And white.
The boomer.
Male. You know, like,
you're
I mean,
like,
I just, like, that whole, like, macho, like, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
well, oh my God, that's my whole,
like, yeah,
yeah
so,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real thing. And the power that they just get placed just for being white men. Already,
because yes.
you know, different colored men can have different approaches because they weren't as praised, I guess, in society.
Privilege, sure.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
yeah.
That's
so
right.
that can add to it also. But I, of course, know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's yeah, in Spanish cultures too, with like the, you know,
sex roles.
Yeah, yeah, totally yeah, yeah. change yeah. a diff, make
yes.
a difference. Yeah,
I know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my God, this is so interesting. Okay.
So where do we go next?
I know. I don't even know.
So I think as far as just like, you know, when you're dating someone
mm-hmm.
and you notice that they have, you know,
yeah. Yeah. What do you do?
Someone very wise told me that you set your boundaries up very clearly in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. I have a saying that is somewhat controversial,
okay.
and that is water finds its level in relationships. And so wherever you are on your kind of emotional journey or your personal journey with
mm-hmm.
your own habits and your own, you typically find someone that matches those matches those emotionally to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had that as well. I've can firsthand agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I say something similar. I say like we meet people where we meet them
mm.
and like we, it's like a mutual, like if I'm meeting you with where you are in life and I'm here, great. And then in a month, if I'm trying to move up and you're still there,
mm-hmm.
I still met this person where I met them. And, like, if they're not down to, like, do some type of change, I can't be, like, mad. I can't be responsible to fix that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I can't be, like, shocked. Like, what do you mean you don't want to change? Or, like, you don't want to go to the gym or whatever it is. Something as little as, like,
yes.
what do you mean you don't want to eat better? Or, like,
mm-hmm.
but, like, no, when I met them, they weren't doing that. And they didn't want to do that. And they were comfortable in that space. And so then I'm
the worst at that, by the way. I'm a therapist. I'm like, I can heal all of this. I can fix this. I can work with this.
You're like, perfect.
They got room here. So, yeah. But no, absolutely.
And
you're strong enough to do that, and then I'm like, that is good. That
and
is exactly
and it comes
right.
with learning and with growing pains. I think that I want to find these patterns now as a young, you know, someone in my 20s, mm-hmm. because I don't have a genuine healthy relationship, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, whatever it is in my life that I can base it off of. So I don't have like examples. That's I have right. just my own little brain, my own little yes. Google, my therapist, yes. my yes. little podcast or whatever I do is like, so my relationship that I end up being in for life or for however long, or the one that I hatched, the man I choose to have kids with, mm-hmm. I am terrified because I'm like, if I fuck this up after my years of hard work.
Yeah, let me tell you though, you can't work on this stuff unless you're in the relationship.
I agree, because I can be picture perfect, ready yes, to go. And yes. if I find someone who's not, if they aren't willing to build or grow or whatever with me, mm-hmm. then, and yeah.
Well, but then they're also going to
have to do their own journey.
If you're not in a relationship, then what's coming up for you now can be assumed and can be talked about
yes.
and can be, but when you're actually in it,
totally,
it's like, wait a second. That's where those trauma responses mm-hmm. come in, because you're like, wait, this is out of control. I've been working on this. Why is this happening
yes.
right now? And you're like, you're like in a fight, flight,
yeah.
mode,
yeah.
right? And that's where you have to work on it. And you have to work on it with that person.
Uh-huh.
Or you have to work on it within that relationship. If they're not ready to work on it, you work on that within that relationship. But if you're not in the relationship,
yeah,
you're not working on being in a relationship
yeah.
in the way that is at that depth of.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that's valid. Because I would agree, like, even with, like, people that I would, or a guy that I would put my time with more so, mm-hmm. I would be like, oh, like, I would never put up with that. And then when I was in it, I was putting up with it.
That's right.
And then I'm in it, and I'm like, wait, and it takes X amount of months to realize, like, wait, Alyssa, this is, like, what you are against. Why are you allowing this to happen?
That's right.
And I think that's when it, like, flipped a switch of, like, wait, if I wouldn't want my sister to deal with this, why would I deal with this? Mm-hmm. Or if I would tell my best friend, like, he's a loser, like, he's an asshole, like, what are you doing with your life? Like, why am I still in it? And then that goes back to having to find out why and deeper things, yeah. and then also deciding when is enough. Like, when are you putting those boundaries up? And to what extent?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, you say and you talk the talk, and then you're in it, and now it's hard to get out of it, and now you understand why people stay in it for so long.
That's
or
right.
never get out of it.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you're emotionally, now you're attached.
Yeah.
There's an attachment.
Yeah, totally.
There's a relational attachment.
Uh-huh.
So we go back to our relational attachment roots, and they show up, and you
yeah.
can't hide them. They are like breathing.
Yeah.
They're in there. they're just like, wait, what am I doing right
and
now?
And if we had different relational attachment styles, mm-hmm. it makes it even harder because
yes.
now we're clashing.
Well, it's so interesting because there are certain relationship attachment styles that match up a lot.
Okay. Like what?
Okay, so like narcissists always find codependence.
Okay.
Now this is me being very general.
Yes,
there's
and
like
yeah, know, there's deeper like levels not, to
yeah,
everything.
Deeper levels,
yeah.
Yes. But like avoidance.
Okay.
Like avoidant attachment style mm-hmm. will often find an anxious attachment style.
Which makes sense.
Or an anxious avoidant attachment style.
Okay.
A lot of times, avoidant attachment styles also find other avoidant attachment, mm-hmm. which are the hardest to work with.
Yeah.
To avoid. You're like, wait, you guys are both avoiding everything. You're so good at it.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times, codependent. And when I use the word codependent, I mean probably mostly like anxious or I'm trying to think of the. I can't think of the last attachment style, but kind of like they're both in that space of like, who you're everything to me and I need you to live and I need you to live
uh-huh.
and you're everything to me. And what do you do? You know, they
yeah.
kind of find each other like magnets.
Yeah.
Addiction, you know, when you have an addiction, someone who has an addiction will often find someone who is more anxious or codependent.
Okay.
Right? So you kind of find, sometimes you find it's like you compliment each other, but not in a good way. Like, this works, but it doesn't. Like,
it works on paper, but in it, it's fucking a lot.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, exactly. It's like, something's not right.
And yet. That, because even you naming this, the first few that you named, I could think of people that are in those spaces, mm-hmm. or of a time where I was in that space with the other person.
For sure.
And because of that. And that's so much. And I also, a few days ago, because I also have always been, I love like the birth order thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's I think fun. Is like crazy cool to me because I am the oldest and I think I am like the most, I'm the poster child for what an oldest child looks yeah. like in psychology. Like, I think that I would fit like that.
Me and you both. We are both like, I'm there with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, sure. I fit my order and everything, and my siblings fit theirs 100% mm-hmm. as well. And my mom and dad are both the oldest. Okay.
Of how many?
Of three.
Both of them?
Both of them are three, and I am the oldest of three.
Wow.
And I noticed I have seriously only dated men who are the oldest of three.
Whoa. Really?
Yes. And keyword, dated, which means we're no longer together because it didn't work. Because I always thought I need an equal, like, powerhouse. Which I think the oldest usually has a bit more, like,
some of that,
mm-hmm. you know, like more independence maybe or whatever it is in some sense. And I just gravitated towards that. I don't think I've ever, I can't write today. I can think of one boy that I talked to that was the baby, but he was the baby in a high context communication culture. So he was the god of that household. Wow. And after a week I was like, this is not gonna work for me. I cannot have you I cannot have you be think you are just top notch because I don't do well with that. I need a little bit more humble of a man, I think. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I really can't think of, I don't think I ever talked to an oldest an only child.
Mm. I'm married to an only child.
Okay, how
I'm
is that?
One of nine. It's tough.
You're one of nine.
I'm one of nine. He's an only child.
And what's your order?
I am number two, but the first girl.
Yes.
In an Irish Catholic, you know,
totally.
Very traditional.
So my similar role energy. Like, yeah, I get
yes,
it.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
He's an only.
Okay.
And we have had to work on a lot of things. Let me tell you. And I have an only. I'm an only.
Yes,
child.
You have an only, you know what I mean? Boy, so and like, I agree.
Yeah.
And I was.
Yeah,
wondering about that because I was instantly in fear of when I have kids because if I'm going to be insane with, like, not insane like bad, but like I'm going to have so much like, oh my god, like how do I make them perfect? But I can't make them perfect. And I think my mom did a good, my biggest fear, because I want more than one kid, God willing, if I'm able to, and my biggest fear is having, I hate sibling rivalry because I never grew up in that. We are the most loving, supportive siblings. And
great.
Every day I'm like, Mom, how did you do this? Like, how did you, Dad, how did you nurture three children to literally, like equally just love and support each other? We haven't had a day of angst. Like, we never fought, like, nothing.
Wow.
And not, like, creepy, like, ooh, like, we don't, but, like, no, like, genuinely cannot ever.
Caring about each
yeah,
other.
Like, we've never
yeah.
not. Yeah. And I have memories as a child of my dad always saying that it's you three. If we're not around, it's you three. Like, one day we won't be around, so it will be you three. And I maybe, I was the oldest, so I always felt that was, like, scary for me to hear because I, like, processed it more. But I don't know if that was a part of, like, us always knowing we have to figure it out between the three of us and, like, always be good. But, like, we never fought. Like, we never had bad
yeah.
blood.
I wonder, too, if, like, culturally,
I thought
if there's
that,
something
for
to
sure.
that, too, because it's, like, family is so
the
valued
loyalty.
And loyal.
Yeah.
And it's, like, there's examples of that everywhere because, like, your parents' siblings are around.
Uh-huh.
Your grandparents are
totally.
Around. You just see it and you feel
yes.
it. And so I feel like it's more of an environment where you're encouraging those relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, and I agree. And I think one thing I was also lucky to have is we were the only kids in our family for maybe 15 years.
Mm,
so
wow.
we didn't have cousins or anything. So we were like the
so
kings and queens.
Loved on you.
So we were all yeah. equally loved. I don't think I ever felt like, oh, mom loves brother more. Or I hope my siblings also never thought like, oh, it's one of the other's the favorite. Like, we never felt that because we always had an adult present, whether it was, oh, my aunt, my uncle, my grandparents, whoever.
Yeah, different type of relationship
that fed us adults. Love uh-huh. from adults. Mm-hmm. So we never had, like, a babysitter. It was always a family member. So that was also something I think that I was instilled that was, like, interesting that I didn't know was, like, could be seen as a blessing because thankfully they have been healthy relationships, but also that can be a negative for people who have negative household or negative relationships with family. So it's just, like, I was just thinking because when you were saying, like, how by two you're already, like, feeling what mom's feeling and all that stuff, yes. mm-hmm. it's, like, I was thinking of, like, my mom and, like, what she was feeling. But they were excited to have me. I was the first baby in the whole family. Mm-hmm. And then brother and sister, if the first baby was good, brother and sister are going to be good. So, like, I feel like maybe it was a healthy, like, pregnancy for her. And I never talked to her about this, so I can always chip. Like, that's going to say, like, that'll be a cool deep. Talk because uh-huh. she, of course, would go into it. But from what it as was known as kids, because we were the only kids in our family, we were always very loved.
Yeah, that's...
And it was verbally expressed also, which was nice.
And if you see relationships between your mom and their siblings, your dad and mm-hmm. his siblings, and they're good and they're healthy and they're, you know, I mean, everyone has some dysfunction.
Yeah, they're not
like, they're
at
like,
all,
you know,
like, picture
like
perfect,
repair,
but...
love.
Yeah.
Maturity, you know, respect. Mm-hmm. Then you feel more comfortable with it, and that comes more natural to you. So.
I think, because my parents both grew up in rough, poor, like, hard times in Chicago in the 90s. And so they more so grew up, like, Shameless, the show Shameless. Like, finessing, trying to survive in this world, trying to survive in the streets, like, all that stuff. Mm. And so because of that, their relationship with their siblings was, like, at the end of the day, no matter what happens, we're going to survive and we're going to get through it. They both had their own traumas from their parents that they had to figure out on their own. Mm-hmm. And both my parents being the oldest, they were the ones in charge of figuring it out. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, all those little things can tie into it. But because of that, they wanted to make sure we were so loved and nurtured because they didn't get that from theirs.
And that's kind of, that's how the generational patterns, mm-hmm. I mean, I always go back two or three generations when I work with clients.
Okay.
You know, I want to know about your grandparents. I want to know about their grandparents as far back as you can go. And what were the relationships and what was, was there addiction and what,
totally.
You know, all of those things. Because it is generational. I mean, we know at least two generations are affected.
Yeah.
So that's a, you know, kind of seeing those patterns and knowing, okay, my mom and dad went through this and they really poured a lot into this specific aspect and it really shows, you know, is important and valid.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
So with, like, the oldest, like, this girl on TikTok, she was like, I have a theory. According to studies, 86% of couples who are both the oldest, and if they get married, they have the highest divorce rate.
Whoa. I never heard that.
And again, it's a TikTok. Who knows what's going
on? What about
on?
Oldest and only?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look into it. But that came on my feed probably because I know I'm the oldest.
Yeah,
and, you know, the algorithm that's and everything. But I was just like, that was like, whoa, like, I wonder how I would, if I would work better with a middle child or a baby. But would I want to take on the more maternal roles like I do?
Like, what if you were with number 3 of 5?
Or yeah.
Or number 4 of 8? Or
yeah.
Number 5 of 9? Or
yeah,
you know,
yeah, totally.
Like, yeah.
So
that's interesting that you've only...
It's
on
weird.
In relationships with oldest.
Yeah.
Three.
It's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I didn't break that down until I saw that TikTok literally last week. And I was like, wait a minute. And I can name, like, the more, like, dominant relationships that I was with, whether it was, like, a solid boyfriend, girlfriend, or, like, a solid, like, thing or whatever.
The one that I'm familiar with, was that an oldest of 3?
Yeah.
Oh,
but there
so
was many years spread apart.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of information there we can unpack. What?
Maybe that'll be off camera.
Yes.
But yes, that's what I'm saying. And it worked for as long as it did.
Yeah.
And so it just made me realize, like, I wonder what that means and, like, why I gravitate towards that.
Mm-hmm. Initially, probably some of it has to do with the fact that that's what both your parents did and were. And then also there's something that's drawing you in enough that you're staying with that person.
Yeah.
So kind of the implicit attachment style.
Yeah.
We feel safe. We want to.
It's familiar.
Feel safe in our relationships and familiar. That's right. So, yeah, that's really interesting.
Oh my God. We'll have to talk more about that off camera because that is super interesting, actually. Mm. And I was telling friends, and they were like, "Oh, I've never been with an oldest." Or like, it was. I was like. The
yeah, that's so interesting.
The outlier.
Let's see. Have I been with oldest? I am quite certain I have. We're
gonna
have to think about it.
Oh God. Yes. So that was something I've been looking into more, and I want to like actually even talk about it in my own sessions too.
Yeah.
But yeah, just food for thought. Maybe you can look into it more and let me know what you find.
Yeah, we could definitely talk on
that. Yeah, for sure, because that is interesting. Okay, so we've chit-chatted for quite some time.
Yeah.
So I do just want to quickly touch on a few more things before wrapping up. One is, in short, someone who's looking for a therapist, what steps do you take? And what forms of therapy are there, resources, if you don't have if you don't have insurance or whatever that might look like for somebody?
Yeah, so I'll send you some resources for if you don't have insurance, mm-hmm. and, you know, you need some, like a sliding scale or something.
Okay, thank you.
But there are, you know, all different types of therapists,
mm-hmm.
and most therapists do offer a free 15-20 minute consultation.
Okay.
And I always encourage people to take that. It's a very short time to spend with a therapist, but if you kind of have a few things that you want to work on, like I'm having struggles in my relationships, or, you know, I keep fighting with my mom and I don't know what to do about it. I'm feeling anxious, I'm feeling depressed, you know, and you go to the therapist with those things, how would you work with me? What is mm-hmm. your modality, or what kind of practice do you have? So a very common practice is cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that fall under CBT, which is ACT, acceptance commitment therapy, and DBT. And those are kind of like changing the way you think. I would call that a top down therapy, like changing the way you think, trying to like think your way into a new way of like being. And it's not as in depth. It can be a little more surface level, which a lot of people like.
Yeah.
And it's good for them. I'm more of a bottom up therapist, meaning I do body work, somatic work. And that's more, if you are looking for a trauma therapist, you do not, I would strongly suggest not to go to a CBT therapist, because you're not going to talk yourself out of your trauma responses.
Okay.
And, so, you know, there's the different styles, the different types. You can go to their website and see what they're trained in. Some therapists are very reflective and listening and kind of reflecting back. I'm a very interactive therapist. I am very direct. Uh-huh. I am very like, so if you're like someone who's like, I don't know what to talk about, you would probably come see me.
Okay.
Like, I'd be like,
you get into it right away.
Yeah, let's do it. What do you, you know?
Yeah.
If you're someone who is like, I've had people come to me and they're like, I feel like we don't like spend any space with like my, like me crying, or, you know, and I'm like, well, we do, but then I get in there. Like, I'm going to ask you, but I'm not, like, a very, like, I don't, like, some therapists are literally, and this is a type of therapy, like, psychoanalytical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's more just, like, I'm just here, and I'm reflecting back to you, mm-hmm. you know? And that can be really good, and that's really long-term therapy, but I guess it depends on what fits. And for different times, like I'm in it with a therapist now that's a somatic therapist. When I first started going to therapy, I was with a talk therapist who only did talk therapy with me, more cognitive behavioral mm-hmm. stuff. Then I was with a psychoanalytical therapist, more Freudian stuff.
So
all different phases of your life could be different things too.
Uh-huh.
The most important thing is that you give it one or two sessions.
Yeah.
I would say one or two sessions. And if it doesn't fit, mm-hmm. do not make it fit.
Okay.
You know, if you don't feel comfortable, it's okay.
Uh-huh.
You can just, as long as you cancel within the policy hours and you don't get charged, just if you have to, ghost them. But don't keep seeing a therapist because you think, like, I should feel differently, or, you know, I need to try, like, I would say two or three, you should feel some relief.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And also always use those consultations
as a little starter.
Yeah.
Okay.
To get to know them. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, 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 that did.
I forget what it was.
No, that did. You even explaining the different types of therapists is helpful because I didn't know that. I knew there were different types, but I didn't know like to what degree.
Yeah, there's so many. Like, I'm going to get trained next week on touch therapy.
Okay.
Which is like totally an awesome form of therapy.
Yeah.
But that's like, with Steve Terrell's the guy who trains in it. And that's, he says, like, right upon conception, your wiring starts happening. Mm. And then it's like, there's certain touch points on your body where trauma's stored, your adrenal glands, things like that, and kind of getting your body. So people who have, like, you know, they get really anxious and they don't know why, and that this would be a great modality for them.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't actually have to touch. You can also do intentional touch where I walk you through it, I talk you through it, and you imagine it yourself, or it could be physical touch. But that's like a somatic practice. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I want to hear about that later when
yeah.
you're in
I'm
it.
Pretty excited.
That's so, cool. Yeah. Okay, now what are your thoughts if people, let's say you're 16 and you want to go to therapy, but mom and dad say no. What resources do they have? Or just in general, the stigma with therapy, people who feel like embarrassed for wanting to go.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten better, but like I said, in different cultures, there's different mm-hmm. stigmas and different, you know, outlooks on therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what thoughts, resources?
I mean, I think like there's different types of therapy out there now where you can do like texting.
Okay.
I don't love that, but it's like, okay, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
You know, my mom the other day was like, I had a therapy session with AI. I'm like, what? Like, hold the front door. Like, what? And she's like, oh, yeah. And
with AI?
She, like, clicked on something, and it was like, hi, how are you feeling today? And she's like, I'm sad. And it's like, you're going to be okay. This is hard. Like,
oh
AI.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, and I'm like,
it's
don't
terrifying.
Ever do that again. Don't ever do
oh
that again.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, it helped her, actually. She was like, it actually
helped. It felt better. She needed the instant validation.
And I was like,
oh, my God.
Did you give her address? Like, what? Because they texted her
yeah.
later, and they're like, how are you feeling, Alexis? And I was like, Mom.
That's
so
terrifying.
But there's different levels. So,
kay.
Also, if you're 16 and you are want to see a therapist and your parents aren't for it, I think that it's important for people to advocate for themselves. Like,
mm-hmm.
I understand you're not okay with this. I feel like I need it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have to go into details about your therapy. Like, I've worked with people whose parents are not on board with
uh-huh.
therapy. And it's like, you get to set the boundary up. You can, like, say, you know, we're talking about in general these things, or, you know, I don't want to talk to you about what I'm saying in therapy or what I'm doing. And I don't want to hear your opinion, you know,
yeah.
that kind of thing. But I think for the most part, like culturally, if someone is like not on board with therapy or, you know, it, like worried about it or whatever. So I think like working with, you know, maybe different cultures and different beliefs around therapy. What's worked for me is really being open to exploring with the client or the person seeking
mm-hmm.
therapy, how, like, what are talking points that you can use with your family? Your family's invited in.
Yeah, okay.
Do they want to talk to me?
Yeah, beforehand.
You know, yeah,
safety,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah,
okay,
like
that's
what
valid.
I do, here's my website.
Yeah.
And that's always worked. And I have worked with clients whose their parents are like, we don't like what Melissa's telling you. Like, we don't
yeah.
like, you know, and I'm like, well, they can call me. Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
You sign an ROI form and they want to talk to me, which they have, you know, they don't. But,
uh-huh.
But that's, yeah, that's something that, but also there's online sites like BetterHelp, which, you
yeah,
know, I'm
I've
not
seen.
Promoting them because they kind of stink. But I am saying if that's your only option and you're 16 and texting
yeah.
through therapy is going to help you, then use that, you know,
mm-hmm.
so... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. It's just, I know people are sometimes like, whoa, you see therapists, and it's like, they think like you're automatically like not well in some way.
There's a lot of stigma.
And I'm like, no, you think every human should go just for life.
Yeah, have you ever seen those memes where they're like, when it's like, if you want to date me, tell me who your therapist is and what you're working on.
I love that. My friend made a joke. She's like, my biggest fear are men who don't go to therapy. And I'm like, period. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That's funny. Yeah, I do. I love the therapy memes. They're so funny. okay. So to wrap things up, do you have anything you want to for sure talk about? Any last minute topics or anything you need to get your voice across?
No, I think kind of we covered a lot of the stuff that I, in general.
Yeah, you know? And we can have you on to like deep dive certain topics and stuff later. Yeah. We're just going to get people comfy with you. And then if I get people asking for different topics and stuff, I think at our age, especially with my like friends and people who I'm talking with closer two in my circle are always similar, like the relational and like kind of figuring yourself out, transitional periods in life. Mm-hmm. So I think we kind of gave some nice ground for that for now.
Yeah. And I will say, mm-hmm. now that you mentioned your age and kind of, I do notice a pattern of people that are coming in that I see that are going through divorces and met in their 20s, you know, there seems to be some like, when we reflect back, because when they're 20 years later, they're a couple kids deep and they're like, what is going on? You know? And I'm like, when you guys met, what were some of the things, you know, like, and oh, I was 27. We just graduated college. Da, 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 right?
Yeah.
One thing that I notice is a lot of the things they overlooked because of the fun and the, you know, like it's so much easier to date when you're 27.
Totally.
It's like a lot harder when you're 35 with two kids.
Yeah.
Or 45 with three kids, you know, whatever it is. They overlooked them and they knew, like there were things that they knew deep, you know.
Yeah.
And so I just think if you are in relationships or you are noticing patterns.
Totally.
100% jump into therapy because it's going to save you a lot of money and a lot of heartache.
And then later. That is so
it's
valid.
Not everything will heal. But
yeah.
Some things will heal.
Yes.
And there are levels of healing that you can get to before you commit to that level.
So hearing that is very validating because I already at this age have came to that conclusion. If I'm seeing issues in the first month, in the first 6 months, in the first year with a boy, I used to have the hope that it'll get better, they'll learn, we'll talk about it, we'll get through it. And then when we do talk about it, they learn for 2 weeks and they go back to their same patterns. And so that's also why I feel nervous for myself eventually with finding a real lifelong like partner, because everything is so inconsistent with these boys at this age.
I do have I'm sober. I have a sponsor that says to me, this is not encouraging. So sorry, audience members.
Okay.
No offense to the men out there. But she says to me that she doesn't think that men meet their level of maturity within relationships until they turn 50.
50?
I'm like, stop it. She says that
50?
To me. I'm like, stop. Yes, and I'm 47 and my husband's 46. But I'm
gosh.
So she is a therapist too. Retired. But
where they're like, I think the biggest thing these men don't have is like the emotional capability to understand that they affect other people.
I think that society is as hurtful to men as it is to women in expectations and what we kind of put on each other. I think on men, you know, men die younger. Men have less intimate relationships with friendships and deep talks and emotional. So I wanted to say this, like having a boy, what I noticed was like on the playground, let's say, when he's two.
Okay.
He like something happens and he's like crying. He's very hurt. And like the girl, the little 2 or 3 year old girl is like really like confident and like not upset. And so like I do notice with little boys, there's a lot of emotion that comes out of little boys. More so than I've noticed with little girls in a lot of ways. Now, this is a lot of generalization.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I'm going to say this because this is what I think happens a lot of the time based on society.
Yes.
In our, the United States of America, we put an expectation on men that is like, you are confident. You don't have feelings. Feelings are really unattractive, actually. And they make you too vulnerable. And
they make you weak.
They make you weak, and they make you almost like a jerk. Like, if I go to you with a something, I'm like, I don't like that you're doing this. All of a sudden, the man is like, what, you think I'm a jerk?
Yeah.
You just think I'm, and it's like, no, there's actually a spectrum. There's a, like, it doesn't go from one end to another.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like this, like, I have to be the good boy complex. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be the good boy, and if I'm not the good boy, and you're putting a feeling on me, or you're putting a responsibility on me that somehow I hurt you, I fall apart.
Yeah.
I can't handle it.
Yes.
Because I don't think you can handle it because you need me to be this perfect image.
Yeah.
And I think that's called like the good boy complex. But like,
okay.
I think that happens a lot. And what ends up happening is men, boys, are taught to hold stuff, stifle their feelings, stifle their emotions.
Yeah.
And then they don't get any practice. And then when you're dating them at 25, they're like,
oh,
two.
My gosh.
She never had the practice.
Oh, my gosh.
All I did was learn how to, like, stuff it down.
Yes.
And so you're like, let's talk about it. And then this is what you'll notice if you notice how old they seem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they're like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like they're five. That is their five-year-old child coming out.
Yes.
And that needs to be healed.
Yes.
So as women, as moms, as society, women are created under this idea that we have to be pretty and, you know, our looks are part of our value.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, women should laugh at men's jokes because they're so funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, but we shouldn't make jokes because funny women aren't attractive. There's all these
totally
things, right, that hurt us.
Yes.
Okay. But there are rules like that for men.
Yes.
That hurt them equally.
I agree.
So when you are with a guy and you're like, let's talk this out, let's... In a lot of ways, they've never done that before.
Totally.
You know?
Yes.
And it's like, well, you hurt mommy's feelings. Like,
yes.
You hurt my feelings. And they don't know how to, boys aren't, they're different nature. So why is my son crying? And I still let my son cry. No one ever, like, when he was at Dominican in Oak Park, one of the teachers was like, don't cry, be a big boy. I'm like, you will never say that to my son again.
Oh, yeah.
He will cry if he wants to cry.
Yeah,
you know?
To let that emotion out and practice it.
Yeah, to let
really
the
important.
Emotion out, to practice it, to not be afraid of it, you know. Be angry. We don't let little boys be angry.
Uh-huh.
And they're angry. When girls are angry, we react differently.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But so what I think is when you say this, and my sponsor's like at 50, what I think she's saying is they've had like 20 years of practice.
Yes, by 50.
At your age, they've had no years of practice.
100.
So you're like, can we talk about this? And they're like,
dude,
they
panic. They become, I literally told my friend recently, I'm like, we were having a serious talk and this kid, this boy, man, whatever, he's
young man.
Young man. I call him kid. This man literally looked like he was a five-year-old trying to overcompensate and try to just make me say, hear what I want to hear. But he physically shrunk. He physically became the baby boy eyes that they have. And and that's when I clicked for the first time, like, this kid is literally 12 right now. Mentally,
so, okay.
Emotionally.
Yes. And literally that means that, like, probably the 12-year-old him took over. His most adult self left, and the 12-year-old him took over.
Yeah.
Which you might need to be with someone, and they might need to be in therapy, too, and working on those things together.
100%.
It's one of the reasons why I love working with men.
Which is good. You have shaping.
I love working.
It's important.
I love being able to really hone in on the fact that the feelings that they have mm-hmm. and the way that they've learned to express themselves mm-hmm. is not working for them mm-hmm. and giving them a safe space to be a man mm-hmm. with feelings mm-hmm. and shame and sadness and happiness totally. And anger and, you know, and how does that feel and how does that look? Because they haven't had the practice. Yes. And they don't want to let anyone down. And in not letting anyone down, they hurt you.
Totally. Because they haven't learned it yet. Yeah. And then it's a constant.
Inauthentic.
Yeah, it's a
They say shit that they don't mean.
Totally.
They don't follow through on shit. They do it for 2 weeks and then yeah. they forget because it didn't hit yes. them at a depth. Yes. Right? And so if you're in a trauma response, you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
You're not yes. in the here yes. and now. So they're like, what did I do? It's like the definition of every adult child is using coping skills that worked as a child in your adult relationships. Mm-hmm. That's what you're talking about.
That's exactly it.
Here comes a feeling. Oh, okay, look at her. She's got something. What do I do? I'm fine. Okay.
Whatever you say.
Deer in headlights. Like.
Yeah. It's like the first time they've seen.
I've seen that.
Or crying in front of a guy. They're like, what do I have to do to make it stop?
Yes.
Make it stop. And they say, like, they do. Yeah. Anything to make it stop so yeah. the uncomfortability goes away.
Yeah.
And then the girl feels like, oh my God, I'm so dumb. I just cried in front of him and he thought I was being annoying.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, he just does not know how to handle that.
He is so scared.
And
right
when a
now.
Guy cries in front of a girl takes him in, holds him, nurtures him, hugs him, makes sure he feels safe. Or me. I
sometimes,
do. Sorry. That is my response.
He cried in front of me. I can't.
Yeah, no, that is fair. Yeah. I do have friends that are like, he's a baby. He cried in
yeah.
front of me. If I see yeah. a boy crying, I'm like, I love you. Come back. We're going to be okay. We're going to work
yeah.
on it. Yeah, like his first big boy emotion.
That's legit.
Yeah, but oh my God. Okay, this is insane. This is going to be fun to edit. I'm going to be re-triggered again.
I know. I was going to say, this is a lot to edit.
So no, it's okay. Hey, we have good talk. I'm going to ask the last question. What would you tell little 16-year-old Melissa?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. I would tell her that she's autistic, gifted, ADHD,
yes.
and that's what I would tell her.
Yeah, and that's valid.
I started therapy at around that age, and I did a lot of trauma work,
uh-huh.
and some of these things just weren't going away, and
yeah.
I found that it's actually my wiring, and it's who I am. So
yeah.
I would let her know. Like, in your terms, like, listen, baby girl, like, you are not a weirdo and you are not awkward. You
Aww.
Are lovable. You are beautiful.
Yeah.
And like, just stop comparing yourself to other people because they're neurotypical and you're not, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I would let her know.
Yeah. And that's very valid.
Yeah.
Aww.
So, I know.
Well. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah,
this was so fun.
I have to come back.
You have to. They're gonna be like, nope, too triggering. I'm just kidding. It's not funny. That's
too direct.
Yeah, that was too intense for us. Both of us being so direct and vulnerable. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we connect.
Yeah,
right.
That was. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything you want to plug? Any social medias you want to drop?
No, I think, you know, I'm a therapist that works out of Lombard, and, you know, I do specific body work with people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in checking out my website, it is finleycounseling.com.
I'll write it down
yeah.
also.
So that's it. Oh, and if you have a man in your life that you think needs therapy, send him my way.
You'll be getting all the sendings your way.
I will do all the help I can do.
Oh my God, I love it. That should be your slogan. Every girl would be like, I need to go.
Send your man my way.
Yeah, literally. And not in the way that they think at first.
Yeah.
In the genuine emotional, mental.
Maybe don't tell them to come
yeah,
in
no,
and
no,
put
no.
my card like slip in there so it's their idea or something.
Yeah, you have to make that
kind of in a moment of weakness when you're crying, like, call Melissa, just go. I need your help. And they'll be like, okay, fine, I will.
Call Melissa. Next time I'm crying, can you just call Melissa?
Next week before you forget, call her. And they'll be like, okay, I will. And then once they're in, they'll keep
That is
in.
So funny. I love
it,
that so much. Oh my God. Okay. Okay. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
And for everyone listening, take care of yourselves. Let's check in. Let's talk. Let's regroup. Leave comments. Let's, you know, I have a little Google Doc. Submit your questions. And you know the drill. Like, subscribe, add, post, reshare. Tell your friends. Tell your family. And watch the pod. Promote it. And thank you for your love and support throughout this journey so far. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait to see you when we are on to the next episode next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.